Good evening, everyone, and welcome. Great to see you. Be back for more. I hope you're comfortable tonight. Great to see you, and it's lovely to be here tonight for the third in our series of Lenten conversations. And for me tonight, it's a wonderful privilege to be in conversation with someone who has touched so many lives through the power of music, but also through the power of ministry in so many ways, in so many different areas. So it's my privilege to welcome to Znans tonight, Father Martin O'Hagan. Martin, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Great to see you. Martin, you're at home here. You're at home talking to people and listening to people. You've been doing that all your life.
Indeed.
But it all began way back,
in the last century.
It all began in County Derry.
That's right.
Right? County Derry. In a place called Clawdy. Is that right?
That's right. Well, I was born in Derry itself.
Born in Derry itself.
Out in the Galvin Hospital. Wasn't open that long. But moving on swiftly, we moved out to Clawdy, which was a very much a rural village, really. But we lived outside Clawdy. And I have very happy memories of that particular place. We had the run of the place. It was right out in the middle of the countryside. So we often made our way up to our neighbours, to the Kelly family. They lived on a farm, and we'd all arrive in with those eyes like saucers as Mrs. Kelly would make some beautiful buns and scones. And, of course, the smell and the aroma drew us into the house. And all the little faces with the eyes looking longingly for a scone. And she fed us and looked after us. She was a lovely person. The neighbours were great, and we just had the freedom of the place. So imagination ran wild. So it was wonderful, wonderful. Very happy memories.
How many in the family?
So there would be six of us in the family. So there are the two singles. That's Francis, he's the oldest. And then Eugene comes next. And then there are two sets of twins. So my two sisters, Mura and Joan. And then Martina and myself. Somebody stopped me the other day thinking that Eugene was my twin. And I said, I think that's a case of Vision Express, madam. So, yes, I'm the baby by 10 minutes. So if you look up here, my sister, my twin sister is on my extreme left, and that's me on the extreme right. Haven't changed a bit. And then in the middle, you've got my sister Mura sitting beside my brother Francis with the glasses. There's cheeky Eugene beside my brother Francis, and that's my sister Joan. So they're the set of twins, Joan and Mura, Martina and Martin. So my mother had her hands full, all under the age of three.
And you went to, your primary school was?
So my primary school was the local primary school in Clawdy. It's now been knocked down, and I was baptised there in the local church, which is now actually a centre for the parish. So the school was pretty basic, but there was lots of fun and warmth and, you know, great camaraderie in the school. So we learnt a lot, even just through our interaction with one another. It's lovely.
That photograph's obviously the good room.
That's the good room.
You can tell by the carpet.
The carpet and the curtains.
Can't you?
And that was our front room. We moved into Derry at this stage in the early 70s during a rather difficult time in the history of the city. But you might notice the little clock on the sideboard. Well, I still have that clock, and it's in my kitchen in the parochial house in Newton Arts. So it brings back lots of memories. So, but there is an earlier photograph, of course.
Yes.
So the earlier photograph. This is the quiz. Really, is to guess which one is me. It's the only photograph I've got of myself as a baby. And Eugene described me recently. Because I've just stepped onto the bus, everybody. I've just reached the big 6-0. I know I don't look it. And my brother said, my brother Martin was a chubby wee fella. Thanks, Eugene. So maybe I've given that away now, have I? So that's me on the left, and that's my twin sister, Martina, sitting on our father's lap. And that was definitely taken in the good room. It was like Tutankhamun's tomb, opened only for special occasions. So we must have had the photographer that day to let us in.
The good room had the piano in it.
That's correct.
Because your mum played the piano.
My mum was a great musician and a wonderful singer. So she was the one who had this wonderful ear to play an accompaniment for people, and she could adapt it very, very quickly. But she saw the potential in all of us, and I think my memory as a child was rushing into the front, to the good room, saying, "Don't forget about me," as we all were taught music. And of course, the Sound of Music was the big film at that time. And so five out of the six of us sang. Francis could sing, but he decided not to. He stood back. He thought he was more managerial sort of material. But the rest of us sang, and we didn't have a nerve in our bodies at that stage. We just got up there and sang to our heart's content. And I remember Mummy, she really taught us so much in terms of that experience. Actions with the songs, Sound of Music pieces. We didn't wear the curtains, you're all right. But it was a fantastic opportunity, I have to say, and one that shaped us for the rest of our lives.
Yeah. And your mum was a nurse.
My mum was a nurse, yes, and in the Old City and County Hospital.
You used to go into the hospital to sing.
Yeah, that's right. So when we were children, it was almost a natural part of our lives to be brought into the hospital to sing. My mother was stopped by the matron one evening and she told us that the matron said, "Joan Daly," which was her maiden name, "Joan Daly, have you come here to nurse or to sing?" To which my mother retorted, "A wee bit of both." And there's no doubt about it, it was through that experience as a child being brought into the hospital that exposed us to the fragility of life. And at the same time, the music was a medicine and an opportunity that could bring healing and lift people's spirits. And I think from an early age, that was really, really impacted upon us, that experience. It was shaping.
You mentioned the Sound of Music.
Yes, we've lots of Sound of Music this evening.
Which is St. Agnes's Choral Society.
Don't tell them to turn it down.
Sound of Music is over 50 years old. So it is. And there was something recently in the celebration and that Lady Gaga.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Did some tribute.
There was indeed. Yeah. She herself sang the part of Maria. And this was a whole different side to Lady Gaga that I'd never seen in my life. Because she sort of recreates herself in all sorts of different ways in order to keep herself, I suppose, reaching the public, her public and her fans. But this was a different sort of a voice that I'd never really heard from Lady Gaga before. So I think I was asked in an interview about that very issue. And I said, well, you know, who would you like to sing with? And I said, well, if Lady Gaga can sing Maria out of the Sound of Music, we might give it a go, you know.
So there's still, that offer is still out there, Lady Gaga and the priests?
Well, you never know. Well, yeah. It's possible now. Yeah. It could be Beauty and the priests. I don't know. We'll keep working on it anyway. My father, he was a potato inspector.
Yes.
A very difficult job. And I remember going out with him as a child. I have some very fond memories. One of my memories is we'd get a flask of tea and some sandwiches. And I would go out with my father. My job was to pick the leaves for samples that my father would then give to the department who would analyse them. My fond memories are sitting with him in the ditch of a field and the two of us chatting away about things and over a cup of tea. Probably I'd eaten the bulk of the sandwiches. But he was a marvellous man. And even from a very early age, when my mother was very ill in hospital, he had nobody for a year. So he was in the civil service at the time, and it was a very difficult time. This is the 60s. There's my cover well and truly blown. And so I remember he said to me later, he went to the department to ask for help and support. And he was told, when you've sorted out your domestic problems, you can reapply. So there was no real support. So my godmother had to step in, and she came to the rescue after a number of months. But he was a man who was so determined. And even at that time, would have taken Martina and myself in the back of the car and looked after us while he was working. Uh-huh. So he really sacrificed a lot, as they both did, you know, for us.
Okay, yeah. My own father was in civil service. Department of Agriculture.
Well, there you are. So,
their paths might have crossed at some stage.
Absolutely,
maybe,
absolutely.
Anyway,
yes, Peter.
Way back in the '60s.
Yes.
Garden Tower was secondary school.
That's right.
So you went boarding there.
Yes, 1974. Gosh, it seems such a long time ago, doesn't it? 1974, I joined in Garden Tower, but Eugene had already blazed a trail. He was there from 1970. Well, that's his cover blown.
Yes. Yes.
Uh-huh. So he was there from 1970. Right. So we arrived, all by sheer chance, Eugene happened to be in Poakland Own Monastery, which my father would have attended occasionally. We would have gone up as children to the monastery. And Eugene happened to be there. And one of the monks said to Father McCavanagh, who was there on a day's retreat, or for some reason, you should hear this wee fella singing. So Eugene sang a piece of music. And I think it was Feed the Birds, I think, one of the shows. And Father McCavanagh said, so where are your parents sending you? At this point, Eugene was about to leave school and go possibly to St. Columb's in Derry. And with a twist of fate, my parents arrived and he persuaded them to send Eugene to Garden Tower. And because in St. Columb's at that time, music was very much an extracurricular experience. It was not to be done in school, but in Garden Tower it was. So my mother saw the potential, and so Eugene was sent to Garden Tower.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And in Garden Tower, I remember visiting there when I was first ordained. I was in Smallagues College as on the staff there, and I was Dean of Discipline.
And I went and visited. Sent a shiver down your spine.
That's another story. I'll tell you about that another time. But I went to Garden Tower and stayed overnight on a couple of occasions because my friend, Father Vincent McCartan, God rest him, was the Dean of Discipline there in Garden Tower. And on one of those occasions, I was in the audience for some of a show.
That's
and
right.
I can't remember what show it was, but it was Gilbert and Sullivan.
Gilbert and Sullivan. So the school was noted for the Gilbert and Sullivan productions. Yeah. And you know, it was a lifesaver. Because in the dark winter nights, for us as little boarders, you know, who missed home desperately, I tell you, I appreciated home very much so. But as boarders, it was a wonderful focus for us. And there was a little nun called Sister Mary Gertrude, who was 4 foot nothing. But she had an amazing dynamic character and a wonderful way with music. And her encouragement was just superb. So for ourselves, Gertie, as we called her, Father McCavanagh, Father Fitzpatrick, and among others, would help to produce the Gilbert and Sullivan operas. So we were involved in quite a number in my time. My first opera was the Pirates of Penzance. So my brother was the Major General, and I was his daughter, Edith. And then my second year, there's a photograph which we'll show you now here of, there we are. In my second year, I was Tessa in the Gondoliers. Now, don't tell anybody about this photograph, please. It's kept in a Swiss vault. So you have Father De Largue on the left, currently parish priest of the Loch Shore Parishes. You have a man called Paul Pagny in the middle. That's my brother Eugene. And there's me, yours truly. That because our voices hadn't broken. So we were still sopranos. So we could play those parts. And that was just the way it was. Mm-hmm. And then as the voices changed, of course, there was the drama of the change in the voice. And then it settled, and the rest is history. But these were important moments for us all. There were a few other operas that we were in. There was I mentioned the Pirates, Gondoliers. There was Oliver, we did. And then there was the Savoyards, and there was HMS Pinafore. So these are some of the photographs of HMS Pinafore, mm-hmm. and the one just... the next one there. So there's Father Fitzpatrick, and David is the Major General there, or he's the knight, as it were. And there's me on the left, beside Father Fitzpatrick. Oh, look at that wee face. It hasn't changed a minute. Okay. Thank you very much.
But all that show, you know, that stage experience, I think is something that that kind of builds you.
Absolutely. I mean, it's shaping, it's forming.
I had the privilege, and that's where I starred in some Gilbert and Sullivan shows.
Oh, Peter.
When I was in seminary.
Oh, we'll have to. Well, have to get
trial by jury.
Trial by jury. Oh my goodness.
Silence in court. Silence in court. I had to have this very deep voice, so my voice was broken at that stage, Martin.
Right.
Know,
okay.
You know,
okay.
As it would. And Roddy Gore. That was the other fantastic. Gilbert Sullivan, I remember. You know.
These are fantastic opportunities. You know, we learned about how to. I remember the phrase used: acting is reacting. And I also remember the excitement, the euphoria at the costumes arriving from Glasgow, and they would arrive in big baskets. And of course, we were all meticulously prepared for each, the principals and all in the course. There was a great sense of excitement, camaraderie, learning so much about being on a stage, how to project one's voice, how to tell the story and weave people into the story as much as possible. So it was very important, really groundbreaking, and so influential for us.
Yeah. So coming towards the end of Garn Tower, you're thinking, right, what am I going to do?
Where do I go now?
Where do I go? And so what was happening in your life at that stage?
Well, leaving Garn Tower was a pretty tough, you know, because you've grown to love the school so much, and all the opportunities as well that we had, that we sang in different festivals as well, of course, outside the operas. And that also shaped us, nerve-wracking as it was. Sister Gertrude had gone by this stage. She had gone to Kilkeel to be part of the community there and to teach. But it was time then, I suppose, to move forward. And we had the opportunity then of thinking about the priesthood. So we'd always been encouraged as students in Garn Tower, which was a minor seminary in its own right at the time, to think about the priesthood. So we'd been on a number of retreats, etc., in Dromalis and other places to encourage us. And so Father Martin Kelly, for instance, would have been the vocations director at the time. So at that point, I decided that I would go on for the priesthood, which was quite normal at that stage. In the 80s and go to Queen's. So I went to Queen's University, but I also went to live in St. Malachy's and in the wing, as it was called. And that was the big city of Belfast. And it was so different. And of course, that's where, of course, I met Peter.
Yes, I was on the staff of St. Malachy's College at that time. And another responsibility that I had was a house bursar. So I was responsible for the management of the building and the residence of students as well as the priests who lived on site. Yeah, so that's when I first met Martin as a student there. Yeah,
but it was a great place as well. You know, we lived our time in the college itself, and that was our place of prayer, of course, and also getting to know each other because we were all thrown together, as it were, as classmates. But I loved getting out to go to Queen's. I just loved my experience in Queen's. I found it a wonderful melting pot of different nationalities, different backgrounds, different faith backgrounds and none. The musical opportunities were also there for the taking. But it was also a place I loved because it helped you to develop your critical thinking, your ability to look at society, and shaped you in so many more ways than one. So I actually studied ancient history, would you believe, and scholastic philosophy. Loved ancient history. Didn't have a chance to study it at school, but I took it up at university and loved it, and will come in very handy for me later.
After the wing, you went to...
After the wing, we left the wing. Mm-hmm. I should mention, Peter, that we had a very important individual who shaped us greatly. His name was Mr. Frank Capper. So he was our vocal teacher. And he was an amazing influence, such a wonderful man. He was an accountant by profession, but taught music. And you would arrive at the front door. You had to knock on the door when the clock struck. This was the grandfather clock on the hallway. Then you would knock on the door as the clock struck. And then he knew it was time to finish one lesson before you went in for your lesson. And you would come out exhausted because he worked you to the bone. He was amazing. Now, he opened us up to a whole new world of different languages. So he would give us music in French, German, Italian. And one occasion, it was all Greek. And you had to learn them and sing them within a few weeks. He was very good. He really exposed us to a whole new world. Now, that I will never forget.
So that led you to theology?
Yes, theology. We left Queen's and then we went to theology. So we were all waiting with trepidation as to where would we be sent. Would we go to Maynooth or to Rome? So we had quite a large number of students for the priesthood. Yeah. Peter and myself were discussing this earlier. We had, the wing was full. In fact, some of the rooms had to be opened up above the oratory to cater for the extra numbers. Change times. And so there was a number in our class. So two of us were then sent to Rome. So David and myself arrived out in the city of Rome. Again, what a wonderful opportunity for us. The ancient history came alive, of course, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ordination. Appointment.
The first appointment. Wow. Oh, well, yes. Well, now let me see. Can I speak about Rome? In Rome, we had so many opportunities in terms, not only in terms of university, but meeting so many different classmates from all around the world. A very international, universal church. But music was also a big part of our lives. So a couple of elements was, within a matter of a few weeks, Father John McGee, at that time, was the Pope's secretary. So he, David and myself, were singing in the Sistine Chapel within about 4 weeks of our arrival. We were as nervous as kittens. And I can remember Pope John Paul II, now St. John Paul, celebrating the Mass for deceased cardinals. And we had the whole place to ourselves. It was an amazing experience. One of a number of experiences that we were to have over our time in the city of Rome. But a wonderful experience, beautiful place. We did study, believe me, honestly. And I loved getting out and exploring all the different places. But we also had a little theatre in the basement. And it was there that we made our debut as the Three Degrees, we called ourselves. So we stood behind the stage, behind the curtains. And they'd never heard us sing together before. And we started with, the curtains were closed, people were waiting, and we started, baby love, oh baby love. And then they wondered, what on earth is happening behind those curtains? Curtains went back and there was Eugene, David and myself. And that's our debut in the city of Rome.
Shall we play a little music?
Absolutely,
of some sort?
Absolutely.
That would kind of fit in with that.
That would be lovely. So I think I might go, there's lots of different pieces of music I like. I like music that's very soothing and calming, to be very honest. I find that very helpful to me. And reflective music. So I'm going to maybe start with the Secret Garden. I think it's called Nocturne. You might remember this from one of the Eurovision Song Contests.
Thank you.
It's a peace that catches you.
It does, yeah. It's a peaceful place.
And it takes you to some beautiful places.
You can go wherever you want.
Yeah.
You're using your imagination, but it's also it leads you into a quiet place, I think, within.
In Rome, singing in the Sistine Chapel, and no doubt, I mean, it's a city that is filled with wonderful places and the acoustics.
Very much so. I mean, it's a wellspring of inspiration in terms of art, and some of the beautiful pieces, sculptures, homilies in stone and wood and paintings, and I simply lapped it all up and absorbed it all as much as I could as a student, and it spoke to me and shaped me greatly. And how art, I think it was Dostoevsky said, beauty will save the world. And there's no doubt about it. This wonderful art is so impressionable and elevating, is what I would say. Some of the churches, wonderful Baroque churches, some of the beautiful paintings in the Vatican, for instance. There are so many museums in the city, and I lived in Rome for 5 years, 4 years initially, and then I went back to do more studies, but always something new to discover, and it continues to speak. It's like going home for me, really, in a sense, but wonderful. It's a wonderful opportunity to grasp all this and to let it shape me, to be honest. Now, our studies in terms of the priesthood were very beautiful in that we had the opportunity of going to the university, all right, and experiencing all the different nationalities. But there was the formation of ourselves in terms of our faith and our belief in God and our understanding and preparing ourselves. No seminary can prepare you for what you're going to experience in life, that's for sure. It's life itself will be the educator. But it certainly gave us an opportunity to savour that presence of God in our lives as we thought about that vocation and discerned. But a wonderful city on so many different levels. I just love getting back. I really do.
Ordination. Brought that to...
Yes.
And you were ordained where?
So I was ordained at home in my local parish in Derry. Even though I was being ordained for a different diocese, I was very, very clear that I wanted to be ordained at home in the place of rootedness where people had journeyed with me so much in faith as a child. And throughout those formative years, notwithstanding many people from our own diocese here, of course, who were also there. But remember, I have my foot in both camps. My father was a Randallstown man, County Antrim, and my mother was a South Derry woman. So I have my foot in both camps in that sense. And so there's that lovely connection. So it was a wonderful celebration in our local parish. I do remember coming home on the plane. There was an Australian fella sitting beside me, and by the end of the flight, he said, "Would it be all right if I came to your ordination?" So I said, okay. "Certainly, certainly, no problem." And and he did come. He did arrive, and I was ordained on the 9th of July. And he was very impressed by all the bunting that was up whenever he arrived in the city. He said, "This is fantastic. What a celebration. The whole city is out." Yeah, and the red, white and blue and everything. It was fantastic. And, of course, he went to St. Columb's Cathedral, which is the Church of Ireland. And I think then the police reckoned, said, "I think you're in the wrong place, sir." Bundled him into the Land Rover and brought him over to St. Columb's in the Waterside. But anyhow, it was a lovely, lovely celebration. Fantastic.
And how long after ordination did you get word of your first appointment?
Oh gosh, you don't get very long, to be very honest with you. So I got my first appointment, and I was it was Bishop Daly at the time. So he said, "Martin, I'm sending you to do a PGCE, postgraduate certificate in education, and I want you to go to Twinbrook." Hadn't a baldy where Twinbrook was. I had to look it up on a map, and I remember borrowing my brother's car. And I had the map on one side and trying to drive and find Twinbrook. And I remember arriving. I arrived at the house. I let myself into the kitchen. There was nobody there. And I sat down on the chair and I went, "Well, Martin, this is it." And my first parish priest was Father Brendan McGee. He was my first parish priest. And Tony Devlin was there. Father Tony Devlin was a curate at the time. And Father Sean Gilmore, where I was replacing Sean. So I thought I would be in Twinbrook for the whole year, do my teacher training and all, or my teacher teaching practice in the local school of St. Luke's, as it was then. And I was settling in very nicely. And Tony Devlin was a hoot. He was a hoot. And he was, one morning after Mass, he said, "Now, there's confessions at the back of the church. Anybody wants to go to confession, go to the Father Mark. He's the one with all the hair." And Father Brendan McGee worked like a trooper. He constantly worked out in all the time. The only time I ever saw the man sit down was almost with a sense of religious fervour. He would take his tea on a tray and make his way into the sitting room and listen to the news. That was the only time I ever saw the man sitting down. But he was a lovely man, a lovely, lovely man. Taught me a lot.
You were telling me you have 9 appointments.
Yes, so I'm in my, this is my 9th parish now. So I'm in Newton Ards in Cumber, as you know, and that's my 9th appointment.
Yeah, and a great variety.
Absolutely,
during
those years.
Country.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So yes. I left Twinbrook, rather hurriedly and unexpectedly, because I was moved to White House on the Shore Road. Father Hugh P. Murphy was the parish priest at the time. He took seriously ill. Just a few weeks after I arrived, not because of me, I would like to add, but he took seriously. He had a major stroke and was found out in the grounds of the parish. So I was airlifted from Twinbrook down to White House, and I lived there with Father Hugh P for the year. Now I'll tell you, it was a fascinating experience for me as a young priest, a younger priest, and to live with someone who was very ill. And he was very ill, and sometimes he wouldn't even recognise me. Who are you? And so I lived through that experience, but I also was very pleased that he made a very good recovery, strong enough for him to take up the reins again, which meant that I was available to be moved. And of course I was moved, and moved from White House then to St. Malachy's College, and I lived in the very rooms that Father
the
Peter.
The same room that I had
yes,
been in.
Indeed. Yes, indeed. The room near the stairs, near the sacristy. Yeah. One fireplace. That was it. Yeah. No radiators. You couldn't have got a double bed in into the bedroom. It was a wee single bed, and there was a shower that was like a TARDIS. Yes. If you got out of it alive, you did well. Uh-huh. And it was all quite basic. So I lived there for a year. I helped in the Rock and Hannahstown, but I was appointed as a diocesan advisor for religious education in the diocese. So I joined a team of people, Father Sean Cahill and Father John Forsyth and Sister Maureen McKinney. And so we were the team went round visiting the schools. So I was in that for a year, and then I was taken out of that. And in 1991, I was sent to Rome, back to Rome, to finish extra studies. And I was delighted, and Bishop Walsh was... grateful to him for allowing me to finish that business, as it were. And it was lovely to be back in the city. Thoroughly enjoyed the year. And then I came back and was appointed to St. Matthew's in the Short Strand, or Ballymacarrot. So I lived there for 8 years. And I see the principal from the local St. Matthew's Primary School here this evening. So I lived there for 8 years. And they were tough years. And yet they were wonderful years too. The troubles were still ongoing. And so I was diocesan advisor. So I was in the tribunal for 2 years, from the first 2 years I was there, from 92 to 94. And then I was brought back into the area of catechesis as a diocesan advisor for religious education, which I would remain in until 2006. So it was a wonderful experience there too. It was a very, very shaping experience. I faced my first murders in St. Matthew's. So I was called out to 2 murders and was called to identify the body of a third. So they were tough. They were tough experiences that never leave you, as if they've just happened a few minutes ago. But the people were wonderful, very close-knit indeed. They had an amazing sense of humour in the midst of all that they had to go through. And to be honest with you, St. Matthew's taught me the value of ministry in the street. So it was so close-knit that most of my ministry was done meeting people in the street, getting to know the families very well, nipping into houses. Some nights I would be coming back very late. And of course, there were army patrols and police patrols every half hour. So the army would stop me and often call me Padre. I was a Padre, and they got to know me over the years. But, you know, there was those wonderful moments. I had one. I'll tell you one experience I had of a young man who came up to me asking if he could speak to me after Mass. Now, we had Mass very early in the morning on a Sunday morning. I happened to be on. And he came up to me and I said, "You're not from here." He said, "No." He said, "I'm a soldier." I said, "Well, listen, give me a chance to get myself changed and I'll bring you into the parochial house. Have you had your breakfast?" "No." "Come on ahead." So I brought him in, had his breakfast, and I said, "Let me just phone Ballykindler to let them know that you're safe." And so I phoned. And of course, as you phone, you think, they'll think that this is a hoax. But we phoned the police. The police recognised the situation, came and collected him and brought him safely. I said, "What's going to happen to you when you get back?" "I'd be thrown into the clinker, probably, and punished for being out, staying out beyond my hours." But the reflection for me was, this was a young man, probably in his late teens, the early 20s, a young man, volatile, vulnerable, somebody's son. But at least he went away that day knowing that he was cared for and looked after. So that these experiences were, again, challenged my perceptions and made me think, and were, I mentioned earlier how the practical application of your formation really began to take off, and how life's experiences taught me a lot. But I felt that in the midst of all of this, Christ is in the middle of those little moments, the unexpected, you know. But I had some wonderful moments. As I say, I loved the sense of humour. The people were just wonderful. Went on pilgrimages with the people in St Matthew's. I just loved, they were wonderful people and shaped me as a priest very much. So I owe them a great deal. All the parishes, of course. But that was a time where the troubles were still to the fore and, yeah, taught me a lot.
As a diocesan advisor, going around to schools, and you were in all sorts of classes, sorts of situations.
Yes,
I heard recently a little story about a caretaker in the school who was off sick, and they had to bring in someone to fill in for a short time. And the gentleman who was filling in approached one of the teachers one day and said, "There's something strange going on in the primary one class. There's somebody singing opera style, and they're singing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star."
Absolutely. I think it was written by Mozart, actually.
And that was you, Martin.
That was me. Is that, that was his memory. Well, isn't that a good one? Yes.
Yeah,
I used to love going into the classes, but particularly in the junior classes, because when I did the PGCE, I actually decided to specialise in the infant side, infant teaching. So in the training college in St Joseph's, as it was, I had a whole changing room to myself because I was the only man who decided to do that. However, yes, music was a wonderful way of reaching the children. But in the junior classes, I always held off to the very end. And then whenever I burst into song, the children would simply break down in laughter because they would rarely hear a male voice in a primary one class. But the music was a wonderful way of building bridges, reaching into the lives of the children. And of course, it was a wonderful tool of expressing faith and exploring faith as well. And I think if you sang with them, that made you one of them, really, in many respects. So music was a big part in the primary schools for me. Big, big part. There was one experience, Peter, that I did have, and it was in St Coleman's Primary School. It was a Victorian day. Mary, you might remember this. I went, and Kathleen Hagen, I was going into her class. So I said, "I'll dress up as an ecclesiastical inspector." Because the first ecclesiastical inspector appointed in Ireland was in this diocese in 1883. So I said, I'll get the satan on and play the part. So I remember going into the playground, some of the children, hello, Father O'Hagan. And I would stop and say, excuse me, who are you? And what's wrong with Father O'Hagan? They were all doing the Victorian exercises. So I went into Miss Hagan's class. And apparently some of the children shouted, oh, Miss Hagan, Miss Hagan, here comes the enthusiastical inspector. So I remember rushing in and getting them to toe the line and everything. And I was really strict. It's really strict. And I turned to Miss Hagan and said, Miss Hagan, your class is satisfactory. She had to go into the cupboard to laugh and come back out again. So we had some fun moments. And you know, that little moment, many, many years later, in the Lyric Theatre, there was a play. And one of the cast, the person who was looking after all the props, came up and said, I remember that Victorian day. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So it's just amazing what you can do. I was quite startled by that. What we do now, anytime I'm in a class, and that was my way of thinking in all the classes, what am I doing now that will impact on the child in 20 years' time? It's always been my way of thinking, and I keep that to this very day.
Mm-hmm. Great.
I loved the class was my stage. Yeah. Loved it.
Wonderful. Another piece of music.
Another piece of music. So I'm going to take you to Handel, to George Frederick Handel, in fact, whose birthday is the same day as my own. So when I was a child, I discovered an LP in a drawer. And the LP was Handel's Water Music. And I remember listening to this. I remember actually during one summer, I must have been helping my mother do the ironing. I had the ironing board out, because we had to iron our own shirts at the age of 11. There was no, I'll do it for you, love. Mm-hmm. We had to learn. So I was ironing my shirt to perfection, I might add, at the age of 11. But I remember this piece of music was important to me. It was introduced me to a whole era of music from the Baroque that I love greatly. So let's listen to a bit of George Frederick Handel. Piece of music,
beautiful,
isn't it?
Beautiful.
And I was introduced to this marvellous composer, And he wrote for the human voice, of course, and the Messiah. And it was later in my life that I would sing in that Messiah as the tenor solo in some of the opportunities that were offered. Again, it was just a fantastic insight into music and how music enables one to be completely free. You enter into a context where you are, dare I say it, no longer yourself. You know, it's a wonderful place to be, where your imagination and the creativity take over once the nerves have settled, of course. But it's music is such a wonderful art in itself. So people like Handel certainly impressed me, the diversity and that wonderful sense of creating music for various occasions. Quite wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yourself and Eugene and David sang and in Cappella Siciliana.
That's right. So we came back from Rome and... so over 27 years ago now, Eugene was the one who thought, wouldn't it be lovely to have these pieces, many pieces that were written for the church's liturgy? Wouldn't it be lovely to hear them again, sung in the context of the liturgy that we experience? So you're talking about beautiful pieces like the Mass for four voices, three voices by William Byrd, for instance, or being able to sing pieces by Palestrina and bring them back into their context. And some of the wonderful masses that were written by other composers apart from Byrd that would again be heard by everybody. So we thought this was a wonderful opportunity. So Eugene thought it would be good to found a chamber choir. So a man called Terry Shields, who had a wonderful sense of humour, said, well, if you're going to do it, do it. So Eugene said, right. So Eugene and Terry were the first. And then Eugene asked me, would I become part of the tenor section? I said, yes. David then was approached by being a bass. And the choir grew, the chamber choir grew. And the first chamber choir, the first number of people were 12. We were 12 people. So that each section, soprano, alto, tenor, bass, would have a good balance in terms of sound. So we began to sing together and to build up a repertoire that we brought into the actual liturgy itself, so we were sung during Mass, and also other performances in a concert setting or indeed in a church setting, which can be of a spiritual nature in itself. So the pieces were, if you like, rediscovered, and that's how Cappella, in terms of its essence and its ethos, had these wonderful reflective pieces that stopped the hustle and the bustle and enriched the liturgy. So that choir grew from strength to strength. It's a very ecumenical chamber choir, and is we sang in it for the first 15 years, and then something else happened, of course, that changed our direction. But we still have great affiliation with Cappella and would join Cappella for a variety of different celebrations as well. But it's a great honour to have been founder members of a chamber choir that is well noted now for its repertoire and for the beauty of the singing. And we encourage that as much as possible.
I was in St Mary's Green Castle and we built a new church there. It was officially opened in 2001 and you sang at the opening.
Oh my goodness.
The litany.
The litany, that's right.
At the beginning.
Yes.
Of the blessing of St Mary's Green Castle. And my brother Brendan was playing the organ. And he was recalling that occasion in 2001.
Great musician in his own right. These events in churches were wonderful for us, you know, and have the honour of singing at all these unique and historical occasions were just such a privilege for us. So... I remember it very, very well. It's just, we were very blessed, no doubt about it. And right across the diocese, that music would be brought to bear in so many different circumstances, very joyful and very tough circumstances as well. That's why I say the music is healing. It's enriching. It's also a vehicle for speaking about faith in a way that knows no boundaries. It crosses all boundaries. And that's the one thing we always... have felt that the music it seeps in into people's lives in such a wonderful way that enlivens, heals, renews, and encourages.
Let me take you a little bit to 2008.
My goodness, yes.
That was a big year.
It was indeed. So I was parish priest in Cushendun at the time, and I was out visiting my sick. And it was in February, and I was out visiting my sick. I remember the house where I was at, actually. I was parked in the driveway, and I was visiting Elizabeth, was her first name, and her husband's Dennis. So I'd still be in touch with them. And I said goodbye to them. I got into the car, and my phone buzzed. And I said, hello. My name is Liam Bradley, and I am speaking here on behalf of a label called Epic Label. And I'm doing some work around Ireland, just auditioning some priests. There's a possibility of an album being made where they would like some priests, a priest, to sing some of the parts of the Latin Mass. And we're just doing a bit of a tour around Ireland. And I'm wondering, could you come to do an audition and to be recorded? So I said, right, Epic Label. Right, I see. So I thought about it and I said, okay, well, listen, okay. You know, there's three of us, you know, that sing together. See, those other two, they owe me a fortune. So there's three of us that sing together. There's Eugene, David and myself. Well, he said, well, why don't all three of you come together? So, okay, I said, we'll get it arranged. We'll maybe meet up in the Good Shepherd Centre, which was then owned by the diocese. And so we made our way up to an audition and we arrived. It was a wet, old evening. I remember it was probably sometime in March we arrived anyway. I remember coming in and we had to sing one piece in a classical piece and a religious piece. So I said, okay. So I think I sang Ave Maria, Schubert's Ave Maria, and maybe My Like and Love, or She Moves Through the Fair, perhaps, which I also love. So we sang that, but there was a fellow called Paul who was recording, and Danny Burke, recently deceased, what a wonderful accompanist, wonderful man. He came and he played the piano for us. So it was pouring down outside. Liam was late getting in, and the recorder, Paul, was recording, and Liam arrives in, unbeknownst to us. As Liam comes in and the Paul's doing the recording, he goes like this to Liam. He lifts the two thumbs and then he goes. And then we happen to look round and he comes straight back to the recording again. So at the end they said, do you sing together? I said, oh yes, yes. So we sang a little piece by a composer called Cassiolini. It was about a 15th century piece. But we hadn't sung it for years. Came back to our minds automatically. And we sang this piece. And they also recorded our faces, obviously, to see how beautiful we are, and sent that down the line. And they said, well, thank you very much. It was a lovely experience. Eugene was heading off to tread the boards, I think. He was in a Fort William Society show. I was going down to, I think, it must be the Board of Governors meeting. Yeah. And very exciting. And so we left and thought, well, that was great. We'll not hear anything more. Within 3 weeks, a lady called Sam Wright contacted us. And we were told then by Liam that we had been offered a contract by Sony, Epic Label being a branch of Sony, for three albums, and it would be released in the United Kingdom and Ireland. Wow! We were absolutely bowled over by this. And my goodness... So we had to get used to the whole new idea of recording in a studio. So our first album called Of The Priests, because we said it does exactly what it says on the tin. So we recorded that in Cullibagay in County Antrim. Mm-hmm. And that's where we learned how to sing. So all the recordings, without exception, are sung in each other's presence. We're not in separate booths. We're singing together in all of those. Which is quite unusual, and because we know each other's voices well, we've learned to listen to the nuances and the louds and softs, etc. So, and I suppose having a genetic link with Eugene, the two and the DNA and the music was also a different sound. So We're both tenors, but both different types of tenors. I'd be quite a light tenor, you know. So, and David's a baritone. Some drops to a bass, but tends to be more baritone. So this was a fantastic opportunity, and they making the album with a man called Mike Hedges, who had worked with people like the Manic Street Preachers and U2, and here were the Priests. So a fantastic opportunity for us all. And then when the album came out for the first album, it was like, I remember us all sitting in the recording studio, and Mike Hedges was there. It was somewhat wonderful, wonderful musicians in their own right, and wonderful engineers in the music industry. And I remember us waiting to hear the sound for the first time, and it was wonderful. It was like I can only describe it as a labour of love. And the album was born, and just listening to the sounds, and it was just a lovely experience, and very privileged and humbling as well. So after that, they said not only UK, but they brought the whole of Sony across the world to visit us, and we were in the Galgorm Manor, and we had to do a little expose of about 15 minutes of music, and after that they decided it would go global. So the album was going to be not only UK and Ireland, but around the whole world. Well, you can imagine, we were absolutely bowled over by this. And then we had to begin quite a lot of travel to as PR to actually promote the albums. But the one thing was, the contract honoured our being priests in our parishes. So our being priests was our first and foremost role. And that's unusual for a label of that nature. So we were very pleased and gratified that they also honoured that. And we were always very grateful to them for giving us that chance. It was a wonderful opportunity. I find sometimes life can be very, very, very busy and quite pressured, maybe stressful at times. So what I do love to do is to step away. And actually, sometimes I would sit in my sitting room and I would sit in silence. And sometimes I put on music, quiet music. I'm not too, the music's too lively, and too, if you have like the Carmina Burana as you're having your breakfast, or I just can't do it. It's just too much for me in the morning. I like peaceful music in the morning, usually, but I tend to sit and relish the peace of the music and to be still. Sometimes I will go for a walk. I love going down to a place like Waterford in the Glenariff. I love to go for a walk on the beach, and I would walk up and down that beach and just savour nature and imbibe God's creation. I love doing that. Sometimes I love music making. So a concert, while it's very demanding and you're on that stage and you have to give up your best. And for me, there are moments within the context of a concert where the voices just blend. And you, as I said earlier on, you allow yourself to go into a different context and a different world where the worries and the anxieties that you experience evaporate, and you are in a different place. You are, it's a spiritual experience, to be very honest with you. And but what's wonderful is that you're not only the one who's being nourished, but also you hope that the audience is. But I always think there might be one person here tonight who would just need a good night out and to get away from all the hustle and the bustle. And if they go home satisfied and uplifted, we've done our best. So those are moments, although you're on stage, you're really giving your best, and as one ought to do, but it's also relaxing. You come off tired, but at the same time, there's something about the harmonies and the chemistry of the voices that help us. That's, and how the chemistry can react with other musicians as well.
Where's your favourite place for holiday?
Or for holidaying? I do love getting back to the city of Rome, very much indeed, or any parts of Italy. There's just something lovely. I remember once we went, Eugene and myself went for a break, and David was with us, I think, on that occasion. And we decided we'd stop at the Pantheon and watch life going by. We sat at the table and we had our lunch. It was great. 1 hour went by. 2 hours went by, 3 hours went by, and the waiter came and said, you might as well stay for your tea. It was just, you can relax and just allow the rush and the hustle and the bustle to go by. So I do love getting back to the city of Rome, very much indeed, or any parts of Italy. But I also love the glens. I like the glens of Antrim a lot, and probably maybe because I went to school there, and that I'm always drawn back, and I love the stillness. I love the space. I love the sounds. I love the environment. Very, very much indeed. It speaks volumes to me. Now, County Down is beautiful too, because I live in County Down, and it's absolutely gorgeous as well. But I'm drawn to places of peace and quiet, and that's where I get my energy from. Enjoy the company of others. That can be energising and relaxing as well, like relaxing in people's company. So,
at home, you know, in your house in Newton Arts, if you need something fixed, what do you like it DIY?
Oh, I have to get it sorted. That's the only thing for it.
Have you a toolbox and a power drill?
This morning I was showing a parishioner of mine called Tony. I said, let me introduce you to my DIY department. And it's underneath the stairs. So I open up the door and I have everything from bulbs to tape to gloves for cleaning drains and gutters. You name it, I have done it all. And so I always think I wouldn't ask somebody to do what I wouldn't do myself. So I've got very long gloves for drains. And I've got little gloves for doing little smaller drains. So I like to fix things. It tends to be my nature. Okay. I like to fix things. I don't like to leave things too long. I like to get them done as quickly as possible. So this morning I was actually discussing with a man about the lintels above the windows in the parochial house. So I've noticed, and he has noticed, that the rendering is being pushed out. So I said, it's time to get this sorted out. So it's going to be sorted immediately. So you notice these little things, but then I pick that up because I've been involved with restorations of churches quite a number now. 1, 2, 3, 4 churches in my time as a priest, and it's been wonderful. It's been a fantastic experience. It's taught me a lot. So I do love to try and fix things and clean things. Eugene would say, he talks... Now, if Eugene was here, he would talk about marigolds. And he said, he just goes to the two marigolds and he crisscrosses the marigolds. And he said, and I said, yes, and they have to be yellow. I said, they have to be yellow. So he said, Martin and cleaning. My goodness. Anyhow, wait till the book's written.
Do you do your own cooking?
I do a bit of my own cooking, and I have a very
good... You enjoy
good, it? I love to cook. I do love to cook, and I love company. It's great to have somebody, because you're living on your own. You know, well, Martin, how are you? But it's nice to have company, and then you can have a nice pasta or a little bit of chicken. I tend to eat more fish. I'm not a big meat eater, generally, but enjoy the company. And yes, I love... cooking very much indeed, but I have a good housekeeper. She would help me, and the parishioners they make sure I stay alive. Let's put it like that. They're fantastic.
Well, it obviously shows, because
Strictly, that's right. You've done your homework very well, Peter.
You see, that's why we've got the space in the front.
Right, absolutely. Anybody ready to come up? Yes.
Yes.
Wow, what a nerve-wracking experience that was.
I heard that you starred in Strictly.
I did indeed, yeah.
And you're very good at the American Smooth.
American Smooth, that was my one. Yes, I can see myself coming out now. Myself and Colette. And then swinging her around, you know. And I had my top hat and my tails. And a wee bit of...
Spreading the news.
And it was a fantastic night. And just before I went out, I said, Colette, what about this move and this move? And she said, Father, you're overthinking it. And I said, you know, Colette, you're right. And out we went, and we danced the American Smooth. It was a fantastic experience. I was as nervous being on that stage, because you were in front of such a large audience. We had two nights, and... there were others who did dances. They were all like elastic bands, you know. They were all out and in and round. But for Colette and myself, it was a great night, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Once it was all over, of course, you were during the middle of it, you were just making sure you were going in the right direction, etc. But it was very enjoyable, even in that context, yes, uh-huh, too. It was a wonderful night.
Yes.
Great cross-community night. And it was the first time ever that Strictly has happened in Newton Arts. Mm-hmm. So, and we're having another Strictly this year. It's a Christmas Strictly.
Okay.
I was meant to be a judge, but I was pulled off the bench because they couldn't get men to dance. Mm-hmm. So it worked out extremely well. It was a fantastic experience. Colette was a dream. She just was so patient with me. And I must say, I didn't step on her toes too often. But it was a great night. Great parish night.
And that was to raise funds.
Funds for the restoration of St. Patrick's.
Of church, yes.
So it was a part of I was there 13 mm-hmm. years, just over 13 years. But the past 10 years since I came in 2009, I could see the potential of restoring the church to its Victorian integrity. It had undergone many renovations, but I was keen that this would be a restoration. And so we began the journey, and the whole place, we worked hard for 10 years to raise the funds, and the work began was just about to begin as COVID struck. So we had to put the pause button on, and then a number of months later, the work began. And it took several months then for the work to be completed, and I think the people of the parish are very happy with the results. And it's a unique church. It was built by Lady Londonderry of the Mount Stuart family. She was a convert to Catholicism, and she built the church out of her own expense for £4,000 in 1877. Mm-hmm. It would cost a lot more now, of course, if you wanted to build a church of that nature. And the architect, you might have heard of the Hansom Cabs of London. Well, he is the architect of the church. So for me, it was a crucial moment. And I learned a lot from Cushion Dunn in St. Patrick's and Cushion Dunn. That spurred me on, to be very honest with you. And I said, there's potential here. We could do this. So I rallied the troops and we all got together. And the church now has been brought back to its beauty of the past. And a lot of work had to be done. But the church was almost speaking to me. Buildings speak to you, I think. And I thought that we live with the church constantly. So I was keen that there would be a lot of art in the building. So there's homilies in stone and stained glass, and the tiling reflects the ceiling. The tiling reflects the windows so above, so that there's a harmony between the two. Anyhow, come and see it. Yes. That's the best thing to do. Yeah. You'd be very welcome.
Yeah. Martin, we could sit here for hours and listen to more
chatting
of
away
the stories
about all sorts.
And chat about more.
Yes.
But we couldn't complete the night without a song. Would you feed us?
I would be delighted to sing a little piece
beautiful
of music
please
for you, certainly.
Yeah,
but can I thank you, Peter, very much? You've done your homework very thoroughly.
Thank you.
And thank you for the lovely opportunity of being here in this lovely series of presenters in the season of Lent. And thank you all for your presence this evening. Much mm-hmm. appreciated. Uh-huh. So I'm going to sing She Moved Through the Fair, because it's one of my... I love this piece a lot. It's a piece that certainly brings back lots of memories of so many people who have instilled music and the love of music in our lives. The world is a much richer place because of music, and how it can bring healing. And long may that be the case. So, she moved through the fair.
My young love said to me, my mother won't mind, and my father won't lie to you for your lack of kind. And she stepped away from me, and this she did say: it will not be long, love, till our wedding day. She stepped away from me, and she moved through the fair. And and fondly I watched her move here and move there. And then she went homeward with one star awake, as the swan in the evening moves over the lake. Last night she came to me, she came softly. So softly she came that her feet made no din, and she laid her hand on me, and this she did say: it will not be
Martin, thank you very much indeed for giving us your and telling the story and sharing a part of you with us tonight. We are privileged. Oh, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, and privileged. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you all very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Peter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for coming tonight. And next week, we have the privilege of the Reverend Corina Hearn. She's the Presbyterian minister in Dunmurry, and she'll be with us next Tuesday night and sharing her story of faith and life next Tuesday. So spread the word. Please come back and enjoy another beautiful evening. Once again, Father Martin, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks, everybody. Thank you. Thank you.